You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Pamela Powers Hanley is the progressive voice of the Arizona House of Representatives. Pamela Powers Hanley is a proud activist, a proud Democrat, and a proud Arizonan. Pamela has fought to preserve vote by mail in Arizona. She has battled to protect citizens from the deadly effects of COVID-19. And she has demanded sensible regulations that protect the health of all Arizonans. Pamela Powers Hanley asks for your vote in the August 4th primary election. This message paid for and approved by Powers for the People 2020.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you, 32 years of local talk in Southern Arizona, the John C. Scott Show. And by the way, the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios in Tucson, Arizona. We thank you for being a part of our show today. A great lineup of guests, progressive guests, Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, along with State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro, and then another former chair of the Democratic Party, Jeff Rogers, to talk about a whole bunch of things going on in our world that are quite disturbing, to say the least. Here's Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. Hi, Don. Welcome to the show, and thank you for being with us.
Welcome back on the air, John. It's great to hear your voice back in Tucson. It wouldn't be the same without you, so this is good news.
Thank you. It's like a bad penny. Just keeps coming back. Just coming back. All right, let me ask you a little bit about a whole bunch of things. First of all, the governor has apparently made the decision and has said Thursday he does not intend to impose new restrictions on Arizonans and even requires them to wear masks despite more people contracting the COVID-19. In fact, it looks for him to move in an opposite direction. He says he's going to open up more of Arizona. My question is, how many dead is measured against how many people are back buying things? So you tell me.
Well, they've thrown up their hands. They have, not just Ducey, but Dr. Crist, who's his health director, admitted the other day that I think she said we can't stop the spread and we can't stop living. Kind of telling people to go out there and take your chances and telling us we're on our own. Ducey really had three choices here, and, one of them was good to him or bad, and he found a worse one. They're saying what you're saying. They're basically that the virus isn't that bad. The economy comes first. And, you know, he could have followed the White House team guidelines, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx's guidelines from the beginning, and had an actual lockdown and kept everyone safe through the June period that was recommended, I think, by the ASU group. Had they done that, deaths would have been lower. Fewer people would have been sick here. But they did none of that. That also would have required, of course, contract tracing, which Ducey did not set up in the state. It would have recommended at least, if not required, masks. He didn't say that either. He could have just gone full on like George in these places and done absolutely nothing. And of course, later he'd be left holding the bag because Trump would blame him for doing nothing. Or he could do what he did, which is really play fast and loose with the facts and talk about hospital capacity, which is just an insane approach. You think about that. It's basically pretending to care. And his response was, there's not that much risk. And if there is, I'll quote him essentially saying, we have plenty of beds and ventilators. So basically, when you get sick and possibly critically ill, we have some beds left to take care of you. And understand that there's less than 20% capacity left in the hospitals across Arizona. I mean, what kind of strategy is that, John? It's like saying, we have the highest rate of skin cancer, the second highest in the world. And he's basically saying, well, forget sunscreen. When you get cancer, we have great cancer hospitals to treat you. It is a complete leadership failure. It's a policy failure. And it's really a moral failure of historic proportions in Arizona.
Well, you've got 31,264, that was about the end of the week, a couple of days ago, of people who have the confirmed cases of the COVID-19, but also you've got 1,127 deaths that think that increased by 100 since this figure. If somebody had gone out, Don Jorgensen, and shot 1,127 people dead, from children to elderly, what would we do in Arizona? These folks are just as dead. And it's such a tragedy beyond anything we've ever known that it seemed to me that these people, especially the most vulnerable, the elderly in our community, it ought to be treated first as the major, major responsibility of government to save them rather than, you know, let's open up a few stores. It just strikes me as bizarre. These people have died in the last 90 days. This is incredible. We've never known anything like this in our society. Never. Never. It's beyond my imagination that we could be so cavalier about that many people dead in a very short period of time. And these are our neighbors, our friends, our relatives, our children.
Oh, my family. Lord.
Yes.
These are, yeah, two observations about that. There were 39 new deaths yesterday. Think about that. Every day now we're seeing that many in Arizona. That's less than one of these commuter planes going between Phoenix and Tucson that many of us have flown so often. That's one of those going down every day. That's the number. And the daily case numbers are increasing. From a low, I think, back a little less than a month ago, they've been going up since. And, you know, it's not funny to say that Arizona's first in the country with something now, and that's the rate of increase of not just cases, but because the Republicans will say that, oh, we're just testing more. No, it's also an increase in the percentage of positives, like 14%, and an increase in the number of hospitalizations. So it's out of control. We have no leadership there, and it's a continual issue. The other is, because there has not been any clear leadership, and this was the point, nothing is going to change. We're on the same, we're kind of spiking from the first wave still of this coronavirus. And, you know, stores are opening up again because Ducey just decided, well, it's time, as you said, let's put lives at risk to start the economy up. My wife and I went downtown last week. We wanted to see some of those beautiful murals that have been painted all around downtown. And I got to tell you, we walked around for about 20 minutes and left because no one was wearing a mask on the street. And we encountered maybe two dozen people. No one was wearing a mask. And that's just going to perpetuate this virus. And the problem is going to continue. The numbers of hospitalizations and deaths are rising because we have no leadership in Arizona. And that's not going to change unless folks stay active, continue to protest about this. Again, this has almost been forgotten in the other protests, and make wise decisions in November. That is the only chance Arizona has to turn the corner on this.
Very quickly, I want to get to one other subject on a national level about defunding police. A lot of people are saying, and especially the right wing, I've heard this on this station all the time, we just want to do away with police altogether. Let all the criminals out and give them guns and let them police us. I guess that's what their analogy is. You know, just get every killer out and give them an AK-47 and let them take care of security for yourself. Of course, that's insane. Describe for me what you believe defunding the police means.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's the worst bumper sticker slogan in history when it comes to any kind of cause, and it really hurts the cause. You have folks, even like Spike Lee, who's well-known movie producer and activist, who says the issue is right, the slogan is wrong. So what we're talking about is the need for reform. And the best place people can go to look at what meaningful reform looks like is Campaign Zero. That's an organization, a nonprofit organization, it's campaignzero.org, that has laid out a program called Eight Can't Wait. And those are eight particular reforms that law enforcement organizations can adopt that will decrease these kinds of police shootings. That's been proven by this organization. And their actions, some of them are obvious, like obviously banning chokeholds and strangleholds. Others have to do with changing the culture in the police forces, like moving to what's called the duty to intervene, where other fellow police are required to report any of these kinds of behaviors they're seeing, rather than forced to cover it up. And there are several others that are just excellent. I have talked to national law enforcement folks who work in law enforcement. They work with police forces around the country who support this idea. They understand that there's bad cops out there. But unless you change the system, those bad cops, never go away. And the systems right now are not in place to get rid of these bad cops. That's why it keeps going. And so Republicans can talk about bad apples all they want. But until they accept the need for reform in the police forces, that many, and again, many police supported, including the Tucson chief of police. Now, he says the Tucson Police Department has already incorporated all 8 of these reforms. I hope that's true. I think we've got a good one here. But that's what's really meant by that. It's not defunding police. It's shifting resources, but it's reforming police sources. And I hope folks don't get hung up on Republicans clutching their pearls about a bad slogan rather than looking at bad policies that need to change.
Don Jorgensen, I apologize for the brevity of our time. I only have an hour show here. I'll try to stretch it to 2 hours next month, and then we can have a longer period of time to talk. But I appreciate you being on the show today. Two great subjects and great responses to my questions. I thank you for that. Thanks for staying involved, and great to talk with you. We'll talk again very, very soon, Don. Thank you.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
You bet. Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County, featured on the Bill Buckmaster Show on a regular basis on a point and counterpoint situation with Republicans and Democrats going at it on the Buckmaster Show, which is a great radio show, of course. And, of course, Don's featured on a regular basis there. Glad to have him on our show. We'll be back in a moment with State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro right after these messages.
As Tucson restarts its economic engine, let's tell the world we're open for business. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, and since 1968, Ackerley Advertising has helped companies manage their advertising. And we can help restaurants, retail stores, schools, churches, and nonprofit organizations tell your customers, donors, congregations, and the community that you're open for business. Call me at 850-7058 or find me at AckerleyAdvertising.com. Tucson, it's pretty cool.
Tucson attorney Jeff Rogers is one of the most respected lawyers in Arizona. Jeff is the attorney other lawyers refer when they can't handle the case. The lawyer you choose can make all the difference. When your freedom, finances, or livelihood is at stake, choose the law firm recommended by other law firms. The Jeff Rogers Law Firm is rated preeminent by Martindale Hubbell, the highest award to recognize excellence in American law practice. Call the Jeff Rogers Law Firm at 624-4700. Law offices at 177 North Church Avenue. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Show. She's the hardest working lawmaker I've ever known, and I've known a lot over the last half century. She is Andrea D'Alessandro. She's a member of the Senate, running back to the House as she's termed out in the Senate, and she joins us now. Senator, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us. Thank you very much.
I'm so happy to be here. Another great show. I tuned in last week, and I heard our new president of DGT, Larry Bodine, speaking.
Yep.
And I'm going to be at the guest of DGT on June 29th at noon, and I'm a longtime member of DGT.
I've been to so many greater Democrats, Democrats of Greater Tucson about 100 times, and I've really missed the Chinese food. And the gathering, I guess everybody's doing it by, phone, TV now, whatever.
And they did move to a nearby restaurant.
Oh, did they?
Not too far from there, yes.
Oh, okay. I've been there for a while, and of course, nobody's been there for a while. Let me ask you about this 1,127 deaths, 34 dead yesterday. Well, that kicks the number up to 1,150 plus, and 31,264 by Thursday with the confirmed cases of this terrible virus. And the governor saying, just don't worry about it. Just go to the bar. Nobody's wearing a mask in many locations. I don't think we have a governor taking this as seriously as he ought to take it, because there are people dying every single hour of every single day. For God's sake, Senator, does he not listen? And are you talking to him?
Yes. I wake up every morning, and I have been advocating for Caesar said Gaul is divided in three parts. I wasn't much of a Latin student, but I remember that much. Well, LD2 is divided into three parts. The Tucson part, which is doing well with testing in multiple locations, but unfortunately, Green Valley and Solidita, where I live, and although we have a lot of young families, the predominance of people are senior citizens, especially in Green Valley. You know, I live in Solidita, but I have a Green Valley address, and we don't have testing here. Sonora Quest does testing, but unfortunately, there's an 8 or 9 day delay in getting an appointment, and you have to have a doctor recommend that you go. Department of Health Services will pick up some costs for uninsured, but it is a real boondoggle. And then the worst part is no testing, no blitz testing ever in Santa Cruz County. And I have been turning over every rock, dealing with federal people, with lobbyists, with businesses, and trying to get testing. And if you look at ASU's BioDesign, which I've been posting on Facebook, their analysis has a per capita analysis, and we see Santa Cruz County is very dark on the map because per capita they have a lot of cases. We have been advocating for this for over a month because people in Green Valley, elderly people, people who are vulnerable, are not going to drive to Tucson to get tested. In Santa Cruz County, for many of my constituents, it's more than 60 miles one way to go to Tucson. So it's been a real problem. Currently, in Santa Cruz County, Mariposa Community Health Center is testing people only with symptoms, and they had trouble getting enough tests, and Representative Daniel Hernandez secured 500 a few weeks ago, but it's an ongoing problem. It seems like the elderly and people of color are disposable. I wrote to the governor just this morning and to the Department of Health Services.
Well, we've got to do something because you just can't say, well, this collateral damage is all right, don't worry about it, it's only a little over 1,000 dead, matched right against the economy coming back somewhat. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you weigh literally the numbers of these dead people against how much money you made this week or next? I don't know. What are the priorities of our state? What's the priority of our governor? I think it would be these vulnerable people who are dying every hour of every day from this terrible pandemic that we all face. And, if it has to slow the economy down for a bit of the summer, it's slow anyway in the summer. And get people to wear masks, get people to, social distance from each other and pay attention to this before we all are threatened by it, which we all are, for that matter.
Yes, yes. And, the Pima County Department of Health is, has a lot of challenges, and they're working really hard because we also had an outbreak in the UPS facility, which is in the northern part of Legislative District 2. And the Santa Cruz Department of Health, I believe they only have 5 staffers. The director is very competent, and I got to talk to him this week, but they need state assistance. They need federal assistance. There have been federal snafus, but we're hoping that we'll have testing soon. And I'm really annoyed that there was never blitz testing in Green Valley, Solidita, and in Santa Cruz County. And I've been asking for it for well over a month.
Well, this is we've got to pay attention here. And I know the governor rushed to open things up after the president got off Air Force One in Phoenix. And it seems like that's when he started saying open the doors and go have a good time, which is fine unless you're going to be dead. That's not a good time there.
It's really a challenge, and people need to step up because every person, regardless of their age and their ethnic background, need to be supported. And we also have a problem in Yuma with high numbers too. And we need collaboration. We need state support. I've been asked to do things that the Department of Health should be doing, and it's been frustrating. But John, you know me, I'm a fighter. I never give up.
I know you don't. By the way, I need to take a quick break. I need to do a 1 minute Bloomberg and a very quick CBS News thing. And I want to come back with you, and I want to ask you if the state, the National Democratic Party, is challenging a state law that denies some people the right to vote because they forgot to sign their mail-in ballots. You've been battling for the ability to use mail-in ballots, and the Republicans have been fighting you every step of the way. Let me take a quick break, if you don't mind, Senator, and I'll come right back with you, and we'll have more time to talk. Please stay with me, please. Thank you. State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro. The John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios in Tucson, Arizona. Thank you, Mike Emery. Great guy. Pima County Health Department, under the direction of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, works every day to protect Pima County citizens. It is timely that one of Arizona's most respected physicians is stepping forward in the middle of this terrible pandemic to run for a seat of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Dr. Matt Hines is a former member of the State House of Representatives. If we ever needed a medical expert on the Board of Supervisors, we need that doctor now. We need Dr. Matt Hines for supervisor. Vote for Matt Hines for supervisor. This message paid for by Hines for supervisor.
Hey, dude, man, I'm starving.
Yeah, I want some Cheetos.
Hey, dude, look around. There's no food.
What? Oh, hey, wait. There's one bag over there. Grab it.
Hey, cool, dude. Let's run, man, run.
Hey, what's wrong?
Man, I don't know. I won't start. Hey, dude, it's got that virus.
Excuse me. Your car sounds pretty sick. I know someone who has the cure. Perfection Auto Works. And you won't need that toilet paper when you get the bill.
Perfection Auto Works can handle all of your auto or truck repairs. Call Perfection Auto Works today, 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com. 323-8650. That's 323-8650.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this Saturday afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. With me is State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro, who is now running for the House of Representatives. You only have 8 years to serve in neither a chamber, and she has now served her 8 years and now moves to the House. The state and national Democratic parties, Andrea, challenging the state law that denies some people the right to vote because they forgot to sign their mail-in ballots. Republicans have fought mail-in balloting. This is crazy because that's the most reasonable way to have so many people have access to voting in the middle of a pandemic. Just put it in the mail, for God's sake. What's going on here with this?
Well, you know, I'm not up on the federal, but I will tell you that our Pima County recorder, you know, who's retiring, Effie Ann Rodriguez, she does every effort to make every vote count. So if something comes back and there is a missing signature and they can identify who it came from, you know, if there's a return address label on it or some other indication, because people sometimes get confused and they sign their ballot instead of the envelope as directed. And there is also an issue with signatures. As we age, many people, their signature changes, and sometimes people take medication, and that causes their signature to change. So they do a really good job, what we say is curing it. So when your ballot gets mailed in, and I had somebody post that, you know, Pebble is, first of all, ballot harvesting is forbidden now. Everyone is responsible for putting their own ballot in the mail. And then it goes to the recorder's office where the signatures are checked, you know, and that happens before it goes to the elections department. And just this week, I put on a tutorial because I'm trying to encourage every single voter, regardless of party, to get on permanent early voting. In Pima County, it's great. You can go to the recorder's site, check on voter information, and check your registration. All you have to do is put your name, date of birth, and either your driver's license or your voter ID, and it will tell you what elections you voted in, what elections you're eligible to vote in, and it, it, it shows my record since I moved to Arizona in 2004. Every single one of the elections are shown. So I'm for every vote counting. And people make mistakes. People, especially now with the COVID-19, people and families are stressed. Parents having their children at home instead of daycare. Often, workers on the front lines are working. So there's a lot of stress. So I think every initiative, whether it's a federal initiative or a state initiative, should be to get every valid vote to count, every eligible voter to have their vote counted.
All right. Senator, you're running for the House now. Talk about why you're running for the House, why you want to stay in the legislature. Unfinished business, I'm sure, but I got about a minute and a half opportunity.
I've been talking and fighting for turning the Arizona legislature blue. We cannot continue on the path that the Republicans have led us down. So I'm running because I'm an experienced and proven progressive leader. You don't need to have new people. We do have challengers, and I ask people to look at the clean election debate. It's posted on my new website, which is delisandro4ld2house.com, and they will see my path to the legislature, about me, my recognitions, my legislative work, but most importantly, the clean election debate, which I think shows that I am the proven leader and I have earned one of the votes in Legislative District 2 House race.
You are the proven leader. I second that motion. Senator, we're out of time, but we'll talk again very soon. Thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome, John. Thank you.
I appreciate that very much. Coming up next, Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, one of the best defense lawyers in America. The John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios in Tucson, Arizona. Back in a moment. Andrea D'Alessandro is one of the hardest working state legislators in Arizona. We need to send Senator D'Alessandro and her strong voice back to the House of Representatives in Legislative District 2, which includes part of Pima and all of Santa Cruz County. Andrea D'Alessandro has won the respect of all who've worked with her to build a better Arizona. Andrea D'Alessandro has been a champion for progressive issues, the environment, and for educators who depend on Andrea to battle for more funding for teachers and more funding for all students in Arizona. Andrea works hard as a proven, experienced progressive leader, serving all the interests of Arizona. Independents, Democrats, vote for Andrea D'Alessandro for Legislative District 2, House of Representatives, in the August 4th Democratic primary. This message is paid for by D'Alessandro for Arizona 2020, authorized by Andrea D'Alessandro.
As Tucson restarts its economic engine, let's tell the world we're open for business. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, and since 1968, Ackerley Advertising has helped companies manage their advertising, and we can help restaurants, retail stores, schools, churches, and nonprofit organizations tell your customers, donors, congregations, and the community that you're open for business. Call me at 850-7058 or find me at ackerleyadvertising.com. Tucson, it's pretty cool.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on the Saturday afternoon. With us is Jeff Rogers, one of the best defense lawyers in America, former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. Jeff, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join me. Thank you.
Glad to be here. Welcome back to the air, John.
Thank you. Defunding police, that conversation started with Don Jorgensen. Let me continue it with you. How do you understand defunding police?
Well, it's kind of like Black Lives Matters. Black Lives Matter. Sure, every life matters, but every life is not at risk of being lost to the hands of a police officer who might be prejudiced and who might be acting on impulses because you're an African American man. It's the same thing with the defund the police. It's a simple slogan. But really, it stands for a lot, lot more than that. What it means is basically taking a look at how we're spending money on police and perhaps redirecting some of that money to social services that would prevent crime, and also taking a very close look at some of the monies we're spending that are militarizing our police department, and we should scratch our head and say, do we really need these MIRVs, these giant tank-like vehicles that were designed to withhold to survive explosions and roadside improvised devices? You know, do we need those in police work? Do we need battering rams all of the time? Do we need some of the kinds of military equipment that is surplus that the federal government is giving police departments that make them look like a military squad as they address ordinary day-to-day police activities? And I think it's a broader problem that we need to ask ourselves. And you know, are there things we can do to, you know, decrease the intensity of the experience of a police officer who's encountering people on routine day-to-day activities? And that's not to say that some of those day-to-day activities can result in violence or the death of an officer. You know, I've seen multiple cases where officers respond to what appears to be an ordinary domestic violence, and all of a sudden the victim is now angry at the police officers for being there because she, and it mostly is a she, but it can be a he, now views the officer as the enemy who's intruding upon their lives. And suddenly, you know, the officer's lives are actually in danger. Or if you stop the wrong car, you know, unbeknownst to you, you've made a routine traffic stop. This person's wanted for a serious crime and is armed and dangerous. I mean, these kinds of things can happen in some of your more routine police work. But what we're seeing all across America, and what we've seen now for decades, is that this force continuum of leaping to lethal force when it's not necessarily justified is happening way too often, and too many armed, particularly in the case of African American men, are dying at the hands of police officers.
Well,
and we have one right now that just happened
in Atlanta,
you know,
yeah,
just within in Atlanta, and this one's very complicated. But you know, it appears that the officer, you know, didn't really, you know, he sort of violated what we call the continuum of force. You know, when this man, an African American young man, is running away from him, he doesn't present a truly lethal danger to other people or to the officer. He's running away. It's time to basically call in more police officers and contain the area and hunt him down. He doesn't have a lethal weapon. He only has a stun gun, which he's already fired, and some of them are only capable of firing once, some of them a couple times. You know, was this really justified? I'd really be interested to see where the wounds on the young man are, whether he was actually shot in the back, which it looks like he possibly could have been, or whether he was shot when he turned around and pointed the stun gun, which actually ended up being pointed in the air. So this one, not entirely clear cut like some of the other ones we've seen, but it's, you know, it's troubling. And so I think defund the police is a far more complicated issue. And I think, of course, the Republicans are going to say, well, of course we can't defund the police. And they're right. Of course we can't defund the police. We've got to have people to respond to emergencies. We've got to have people respond to traffic accidents. We've got to have people out there patrolling the street for drunk drivers. You know, we probably should get away from using simple slogans like that.
By the way, having a counselor on a site and available for a situation like happened today in Atlanta seems to me to be a more effective way to de-escalate a situation rather than increase the violent part of it, because police have guns and they have the authority, and they're more than willing to use that authority and their guns to de-escalate the situation rather than talk somebody out of that, or whether they're skilled or even patient enough to want to do that. I think we can do better than what we're doing, especially with minorities in America, that we have to be able to do that.
I think better training is the answer. I don't think police academies are long enough, or that they spend enough time on these stressful situations where, you know, is this the appropriate use of lethal force? And I think we need to spend a lot more time on that. But I also have to tell you that, you know, during early in my career, I represented some Police Officers Association and many of its members, and some other police officer unions and organizations across the state. And I would often go to scenes of shootings and perhaps tried to talk to the officer before they talked to internal affairs or homicide investigators, sure that they had done everything right and that they didn't do something and then later say something that would incriminate themselves. And I've seen, you know, them bawling and crying. And, you know, I thought it was the only thing I could do. I had to do it, and I feel terrible. And, you know, and I know some of these people and have known them for 20 years, and it affected the rest of their lives to have to draw their gun and pull it and shoot and kill somebody. And so, you know, many times it's a tragedy on all sides. But what we've got to do is we've got to have the training necessary to eliminate the ones that shouldn't happen. And there's always going to be mistakes, but we need to figure out how to eliminate most, if not all, of the ones that shouldn't happen.
You know, let me take you to a national level and perhaps even an international level. And the absolute dysfunctional president that we have, and almost self-destructive president that continues to harm his political aspirations almost every minute of every day. I'm really curious, Jeff, how in the God's name can Democrats lose this? And people tell me all the time, oh, they can. They're going to lose. Well, Trump's going to, you know, do it again, surprise everybody. How in the name of God, under all the things that have happened since January 1 of this year, could we possibly lose this election? How could that happen?
Well, I believe that if the election were held today, we would take the Senate, hold the House, and that we would win by a wide margin in the Electoral College and the popular vote. But the election is not being held today, and a lot of things can happen between now and the first week of November. And so we have to keep that in the back of our mind and keep not taking this granted. But the fact is that people are becoming entrenched, and he's never going to fall below 35% to 38%, maybe 39% of the vote. Those people are just going to stick with him no matter what. A certain percentage of them are, you know, hardcore racists who just love his racist language that he spews it all the time, and his dog whistling. And some of them are just economic conservatives who say, well, so what? I don't care about the rest of that stuff. My taxes have been cut, and I'm making money hand over fist, and this is good for me, and I'm a selfish person, and that's that. And I'm taking care of my own. And but we're starting to see is we're starting to see an entrenched majority approaching 50 and sometimes going well over 50% of people who will basically say, I will never vote for that man. Now, the problem we have is the national polling is meaningless, is that Biden can win California 70-30, and he can win New York 70-30. But, you know, that's not going to matter if he loses Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and Florida, states like that. If he loses those 50.1% to 49.9%, those electoral votes are going to go to Trump. And that's our focus really has to be on these states that are key to winning. And those states are Florida, maybe Ohio, probably not. Pennsylvania for sure, and Michigan, Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota, and I'm thrilled to say this, Arizona. I couldn't be happier that this state is in play, and if this election were held today, Mark Kelly would win by 10 to 12 percentage points, and I think Trump would lose by 5 to 7.
Let me ask you about Biden's pick for vice president. How critical is it? Who do you think it will be? And how long do we have to wait on this one?
That dynamic has changed so dramatically in the past 30 days, particularly in the past 2 weeks. I think a lot of people thought Amy Klobuchar was going to be, you know, very, very high on that list. I think she's fallen off the list entirely now because, you know, of the goings on in Minnesota and some of, as we put a microscope on her prosecutorial career, it used to be very fashionable to say, I'm tough on crime. I'm really tough on crime. And that's how I got to the spot I am now as a congressman or a senator. But originally I was a prosecutor and I prosecuted these awful criminals. But now as we scrutinize these careers of these prosecutors, you know, we tend to find things they've done that didn't seem fair. And as we look back at them and seemed particularly unfair if you were a minority or someone who was actually innocent. And to some degree, Kamala Harris has a little bit of the same problem. She's got some, you know, skeletons in that prosecutorial closet. And you know, we're entering a new age. I mean, even people who've lived a whole life of being a hardcore prosecutor, get the max, convict everybody, send everybody to prison, even for minor crimes, like Jonathan Mosier, who's a candidate here in Tucson. People like that are pretending to be progressive prosecutors because they know that in today's age, they can't get elected if they don't shed that tough prosecutor mentality that they had in their past and the person they really are and have always been.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see this. What about our former Georgia gubernatorial candidate?
Well, I don't think she's high on the list. She hasn't won a statewide office. I think there's going to be a sense in which you look very carefully at, you know, if you couldn't win a statewide office, even in a manipulated election like Georgia was, and where they denied the right to vote to a lot of people, and it probably carried the day for the Republican who did win. It's sort of like, you really need to win. If you couldn't win your state, then, you know, are you really vice presidential material? And I like her a lot, and I think she'd probably make a good vice president, could step into the shoes of the president at a moment's notice, should that be necessary. But I'm not sure she's going to have the political advantage that some of the others are.
Well, you've got a situation where that people are saying, well, it has to be a she, and she has to be black. So we've eliminated a couple here. I don't know where we go from here. Do you?
Well, Biden says he wants a woman. And I think it's high time that we did have a woman. And you can say that in this day and age because there are so many qualified women out there. And so he's already drawn that line. He said, I don't think it has to be an African-American woman. I personally think that the person who solidifies the ticket the most would be Elizabeth Warren. But that's a dangerous pick. I mean, it's because what happens is that if they win, and I think they would win, suddenly that open seat in Massachusetts gets appointed by a Republican governor.
Well,
and he doesn't have to hold.
You're right. That's a tricky part of this, isn't it?
He doesn't have to hold a special election for 120 days.
But there you go. Jeff, thanks for being with me. It's great to talk with you. We'll talk again very soon. I appreciate you being on the show so much. Thank you. Jeff Rogers. The John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios in Tucson, Arizona. Mike.
Gee, what a nice day for a picnic. You don't have a picnic basket, Putty Cat. What are you having for lunch?
He's so naive. Well, here's the park.
Hey, I thought I heard a vibration.
It's nothing.
I did hear a vibration. Oh, Putty Cat has bad brakes.
I just had them fixed.
They didn't do a good job. Look out, Putty Cat. There's a cliff.
Geronimo!
Oh, Putty Cat. He go boom. Oh, Putty Cat should have taken his car to Perfection Auto Works.
Don't get fooled into bad brake repairs when it comes to newer cars and trucks today. Brake rotors are way thinner than the older cars and must be replaced for smooth, trouble-free braking. At Perfection Auto Works, no vibrations here. Brakes, tune-ups, total car care, and our one-year, 12,000-mile warranty. 323-8650. That's 323-8650 and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
Pamela Powers Hanley is the progressive voice of the Arizona House of Representatives. Pamela Powers Hanley is a proud activist, a proud Democrat, and a proud Arizonan. Pamela has fought to preserve vote by mail in Arizona. She has battled to protect citizens from the deadly effects of COVID-19. And she has demanded sensible regulations that protect the health of all Arizonans. Pamela Powers Hanley asks for your vote in the August 4th primary election. This message paid for and approved by Powers for the People 2020.